Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Scottish Football Covered. We've got another jam-packed episode for y'all today where we're going to cover this weekend's, I don't know how to describe it, I'd describe it as an upsetting weekend of action, upsetting obviously in the sense a lot of results didn't go the favourites way. We're going to be covering Rangers and Hibs, Ross County Aberdeen, Kelly and Motherwell, Dundee, St Mirren, St Johnstone at home to Celtic and Hearts hosting Dundee United. I'm Mac and I'm joined with Stefan and Robbie. Stefan, you're back. How are you doing, mate?
Back, feeling good. Looking forward to recapping an eventful weekend in Scottish football. So it's nice to be here.
Good, good. And Robbie, you're back with a bit of spring in your step after your quiz victory last weekend. How are you feeling, mate?
I'm ready to do it all over again. I think Stefan needs a humbling after, giving it biggins about how good he is at the quiz. So fingers crossed.
Okay, oh, I mean, I love how you've let one win get to your head. I'm there for it.
I'm glad this is on Zoom. I don't have to hold you two apart. But we'll get back to the football before we get down to any sort of quiz. We'll start at Ibrox. We'll start with the Saturday fixtures first. Rangers falling to another defeat at Ibrox. It was a 2-0 defeat to visitors Hibs. Dylan Levitt opened the scoring in the early stages and Martin Boyle would grab a winner about 20 minutes from time. First goal, Dylan Levitt, we'll start right there. He gets a great connection on it, but Stefan, I'm going to start with you. Jack Butland, he's got to be doing better with that. Do you think I know they've got a big game on Thursday night coming up in Europe, but do you think his position is it under threat, under any serious threat by Liam Kelly?
Is it under threat from Liam Kelly? No. Should it be under threat? Yes. If I'm Barry Ferguson and I'm thinking, who do I put in goal to play against Athletic Bilbao? I'm 100% not all in on Jack Butland. For a keeper that has played 100 games for Rangers and conceded 101 goals, that's a galling stat for any Rangers goalkeeper to be subject to. I think his performances as of late have let Rangers down. Some goals that have been conceded, you're thinking, should have been kept out. That one from Dylan Levitt on Saturday is one you chalk up to what you're playing at. Like, you see the ball, you see it coming the whole way, and you let it slip by. I don't understand how he's having these performances, considering he's a highly rated goalkeeper, and he has produced big moments for Rangers, but I think a lot of Rangers fans are now thinking, do we need a new number one in the summer? And I'll be really honest, I don't see Liam Kelly being number one at Rangers. I think he's a great backup goalkeeper. I think he was great for Motherwell. Unfortunately, I think you hit a level, and I think his ceiling is probably backup goalkeeper at Rangers.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I don't see Liam Kelly posing any serious threat, but the longer Jack Butland keeps making for a goalkeeper of his ilk, basic mistakes, there's every possibility Liam Kelly comes back into the side. Because he was all right when Jack Butland was injured, I thought he never made any high profile errors like Jack Butland's doing right now. But obviously, Robbie, it's not just Jack Butland. There's a few other so-called dependable figures that aren't showing up for Rangers. And the result, at the weekend, never really registered as much as a shock as it would have done at the start of the season. When do we start having the conversation? It's obviously too little too late this season, but is there ever going to be a time, I know we've got a whole summer ahead of us, where we start talking about Hibs maybe splitting the big two?
I think there's a potential for it, but I think for Hibs to do that, I think they have to really not have a start to the season like they did this season. I think next season will be a big test for Hibs, because it's whether or not they can go and do it for a prolonged period of time. Obviously, they have. I know that they've unbeaten in 16 games, but there's a real difference between that going on one big unbeaten run and kind of doing it consistently over the season. I think a lot of teams this year have struggled to be consistent, especially a lot of the teams in the, well, to be honest with you, the majority of the teams, I think, bar maybe Celtic, have struggled to be consistent at times. So it'll be interesting to see, but there's currently, I don't think there's any reason to say why they can't go and, really push Rangers if Rangers stay in the same form that they have been and Hibs do next year, then yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah, it is all premature at this stage. The summer, it's impossible to predict these things before the summer transfer window, and also there's a lot of contracts running out, like yada yada yada. But talking about the here and now, I thought Hibs set up exactly how you need to set up going to Ibrox, get an early goal, and then they were comfortable giving up possession of playing. Of they were comfortable playing when they never had the ball. And what I noticed a lot, they were putting Tierney on his right foot, which seems so simple, but they really kept them quiet by doing that. But moving on to the host, that's the fifth loss at Ibrox in a row, and it's the first time in Rangers history they've lost five in a row at Ibrox. Additionally, that's eight games now under Barry Ferguson, and they've went 2-0 down in six of those. Stefan, I'm going to go back to you. That's Barry Ferguson's name pretty much out of the running, you would like to think, unless the only thing he can do is win the Europa League to have a chance of getting the job. Would you agree?
For him to get the job, he would have to win the Europa League. That's not happening, with all due respect. I think for me, like being in six of those games, they went 2-0 down to Kilmarnock. They came back and they rescued it. They have rescued a fair amount of points, but the five game r losing streak at Ibrox, and three of those are under Barry Ferguson, is an abysmal record for any Rangers manager, let alone interim Rangers manager that knows what it's like to be a Rangers football player. He was a captain. He's been a fan of the club. He is the ideal Rangers man. He knows it's not good enough. He probably knows his name is no longer in the hat. It shouldn't be. And I think this is maybe symptomatic of where Rangers are as a club is. If his name is still in the hat, that from a perspective of a Rangers fan, that would concern me. You mentioned Tierney, how well Hibs played, how much they stopped him. I think if you'd started the season and you were Rangers and you were Vaclav Tierney and you were coming up against a Hibs team, in the early stages of the season, you'd probably think he would have squished it. But he was really held and kept really quiet. Didn't have that many opportunities. He was just constantly kept on his weaker side. Massive credit to Hibs, and I think that's one thing that's probably going to become maybe overshadowed in all of this is that Hibs were the better team for the majority of the match and fully deserved to take all 3 points. And I think that's always when Celtic or Rangers lose in a game. I think that always gets overshadowed is the fact that Hibs fully 100% deserve to win that game.
No, the Hibs definitely did, and you're right to say it so often does get overshadowed. We start talking about what Celtic and Rangers could have done better rather than what the underdog did better. Stephen, I don't know if you meant that. You said Vaclav Cherny would have squished it early in the season. Was that an intentional pun on Watergate?
You could argue it was. Didn't plan it, yeah,
Brilliant.
it's I know quite good that isn't it? Quite funny. I don't know if it'll
Brilliant.
wash by a lot of people, but
Oh, God, mate. Just put yourself on mute. Well, we'll talk about Barry Ferguson. That kind of segues me ideally on my next point. Robbie, David Gray, he's probably manager of the season now. He's got to win it. I know Brendan Rodgers is on course for a domestic treble. We'll get into him and his side later on in the show. But David Gray's definitely in with a shout, isn't he?
yeah, and I think to be honest, he probably deserves it over Brendan Rodgers. I know that obviously, if they do the treble, it's a fantastic achievement, but it's expected of Celtic, not maybe not the treble, but being right up there and challenging for it, at least, is expected of Celtic. I don't think anyone was expecting Hibs to be where they are after that start to the season. And I think the work that he's done to kind of turn it around, be that changing the formation, you know, I think a big part of it was changing the formation because he was, for the start of the season, you could see that he kept changing from three at the back to four at the back to two up front to one up front. He just couldn't quite get it right. And then when he did, they've been absolutely flying. And to say that Hibs were rock bottom of the league, for them now to be in third place and probably will consolidate that third place is unbelievable achievement. And I think we have all got a really kind of, we all probably owe quite a big apology to David Gray after all the stuff we probably said it about him at the start of the season.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that, Robbie, to be fair, because I think on the podcast we were constantly asking every single week, is David Gray's is he on a shiggly peg? Because the performances from Hibs were nowhere near good enough. And there were really it was between Hearts, Hibs, Hearts and Kilmarnock were languishing around 12th, 11th and 10th. And now you see Hearts and Hibs have managed to drag themselves right out of that. Just quickly touching on manager of the season, I don't think anyone should think Brendan Rodgers deserves to win manager of the season. He's got the biggest squad with the biggest budget, looking to win a treble. I don't think, and particularly in the latter half of the season, that Brendan Rodgers has been as astute or tactically capable as he used to, or as he was certainly in the first half of the season. I think a lot of his performances lately, and Celtic's performances lately, have kind of lacked that little bit of a spark. I'm sure we'll come on to that later on, but no, once again, totally agree. I think David Gray should be the man for manager of the season.
Yeah, it's all about expectation, I suppose. You know, I think this slump, if you can call it that, over the turn of the year, I think Celtic have dropped like 14 points since 2025. It's not helped in the Rodgers case, and David Gray's been flying with Hibs. It would be mental if Rangers considered David Gray, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. That would be, as they call it in the business, a heel turn for David Gray onto the Hibs fans. But going back to Rangers, we'll just have a quick preview. Because they're the only team in Scotland still in Europe. Just a quick prediction, Stefan. Do you see them winning on Thursday night?
No, their record at Ibrox in the league has been abysmal. Their record in European football on a Thursday night is well discussed. Everyone knows that Rangers turn up on a Thursday night at Ibrox in the Europa League. But I think Athletic Bilbao are going to be too strong of a prospect for Rangers to stop. To be honest, they're cruising into those Champions League places in La Liga. They've scored a lot of goals this season. They've got class players in Iñaki and Nico Williams. They've got Sanset. They've got a lot of good, strong players. You see their performances in La Liga. Okay, their form's a little bit iffy over the course and play of it, but it's La Liga. You don't get to number to fourth in La Liga without being a top side. This might not, work with a lot of people. Some people might disagree, but I'm gonna go for a Bilbao walkover. I'm gonna say 3-0.
I agree with you. I think Bilbao will win. I think they're probably, looking at the teams left, favourites to win the competition.
Yeah.
I think they're just a step above any other team Rangers have came up against in Europe so far this season.
I
Robbie,
think,
same on you go, Stefan.
oh no, I was just going to say, I think if you look at Bilbao and you touch on the teams that are left in the Europa League, you've got United, Lazio, Tottenham, Frankfurt, Bodo Glimt. Outside the obvious too, right? Everyone thinks English football, Man United or Tottenham, it really should be theirs to win. I've heard the arrogance from pundits down south saying that if you're, Ruben Amorim or you're Ange Postecoglou, you really should be saying that's there for the taking. I'm going to be really honest. I think Tottenham will struggle against Frankfurt. I think United should get past Lyon. But I mean, if I'm looking at it like from a purely neutral point of view, Athletic Bilbao I think they're the most dangerous team in the Europa League.
No, absolutely. I think just the strength in players and that word to gain consistency that they've shown, it just puts them in higher stead than the rest of the teams left in the competition. Robbie, quickly, just last bit on Rangers. How do you see them faring on Thursday night before we move on?
Just for the sake of argument, I'm going to say that Ra I don't actually believe this in my heart, but I'm going to say that Rangers are going to win 1-0.
Well, we've got Stefan saying 3-0 to Bilbao, Robbie saying 1-0 to Rangers. I am going to say 2-0 to Bilbao. But look, it's Rangers enough as the night life looks. In a weird way, I think they'll prefer to play Bilbao than play like Hibs. It's just the way they set up,
Yeah.
being like no the favourite, you know what I mean? Like, I just think the occasion sort of suits it better to Rangers, if that makes any sense. But we'll move back. Talking about Hibs, the team breathing down their necks for third place. Probably should have been third place their own, if we're being honest, considering the great their form at the start of the season, which they failed to build on. Aberdeen, they were on the road up to Dingwall in Ross County, and they won 1-0. Shaden Morris back into the side, scored the only goal of the game, and it was only his seventh start of the season. I mean, he's obviously more suited to that super sub sort of role, but in the starting lineup again, and he took it with both, took the chance with both hands. Aberdeen, they've only lost once in the last 12 visits to Dingwall. But even having said that, Stefan, are you still surprised at this result? Because Aberdeen's form on the road, it's not been brilliant, especially since that run came to an end. And then Ross County won the last meeting at Pittodrie, so are you somewhat surprised by this?
No, I'm not surprised. When I seen the fixture roll up coming this weekend or this past weekend, I did think Aberdeen should be too strong for Ross County. Obviously, only one goal in it. But nah, for me, that's a game Aberdeen and as a club should really be this should take care of itself. You look at Ross County away was the first game for Aberdeen at the start of the season, which placed them on that monumental run that we kind of talked about and we kind of fawned over for Jimmy Tilleen. I think, yeah, for me, it should always have been an Aberdeen win. I don't think Ross County really laid a glove on them, to be honest. So no, it wasn't a surprise for me.
No, well, it was only 1-0. I think, yeah, the result doesn't really tell the story of the game. It could have been a lot more, but there was a lot of big saves from, I feel as if any time I talk about Ross County, you bring up Jordan Amisa in goal. Signed on a free just before January, I think. It's been absolutely brilliant. And a week ago, keeping mistakes and errors, obviously, we've talked about the Jack Butland one. There's another one in the show, not that we're going to talk about in the show later on. Is Jordan Amisa somebody who could make the move to a so-called bigger club in Scotland or back down in England, Robbie?
I don't see why not, because I think the main thing for keepers this year, I think we've obviously covered this in previous episodes, is just there's not enough of them that are consistently good. There's too many of them that make mistakes quite regularly. We've seen it this weekend from two different keepers. We see it a lot of weekends, and I just feel like he keeps it relatively consistently. Performs quite well. I mean, the problem with Ross County, the reason they're so far down there is because they can't score goals, not because they concede loads and loads and loads. They've conceded a decent amount, but if you're comparing it to, Dundee or even Motherwell, they've conceded less goals. So I don't see why not. I think maybe you'd probably give him another year to see whether or not he kind of can do it. I couldn't see him at like a Hibs or a Rangers or a Celtic, but maybe a move to a Hearts or a Dundee.
Hearts are a great shout. Obviously, with Craig Gordon being 40, be 43 the end of this calendar year if he doesn't hang up the gloves in the summer. But Robbie also mentioned there, it's not conceding goals. It's the problem. It's not scoring them. That's their fourth defeat in the last five games. They've only scored one goal in that sort of time. Stefan, that result yesterday with Aberdeen, that killed officially any hope of a top six finish, although the hopes of one were really slim going into that game. Look,
Yeah.
you don't get top six, and now, as I've said in previous podcasts, look, you don't get that top six, and now you're in that dogfight all of a sudden. Like, you're only 4 points off 11th place. Is bottom six a sort of wake up call for Ross County? Because look, they were guided themselves far from trouble, and now all of a sudden you've got 5 games to essentially save your season.
I'm gonna answer that. I just want to quickly touch back on Jordan Amisa. I agree with everything that was said, but I would say Hibs could be in that argument for Amisa to play for them as well. Hearts is also a great shout. I was going to mention him when I was talking about Butland earlier. I think he's been one of the better goalkeepers in the league, like genuinely in top three for me since he came to Ross County. Just wanted to touch on that. Officially, any hope of Ross County getting into the top six has ended absolutely in a dogfight, right? Because they're only 1 point ahead of Dundee, I think. Last time I checked, they're with a worse off goal difference. That could be a really interesting one. I mean, I think only St Johnstone have got a worse goal difference in the league. I think if you're a Ross County supporter, right, top six is gold at the end of the rainbow start of things, right? It's one of those things that might happen, could potentially happen, but very rarely ever does. This is probably Ross County's bread and butter. They've been here before, they've been in the 11th before, they've done the relegation dogfight, they've won the relegation dogfight. I mean, no, most notably was it Partick Thistle a couple of years ago that they.
Yeah, Partick Thistle basically had them relegated for 20 minutes to go, and then had the collapse of all collapses.
Yeah, it really was a collapse. I think for me, I don't see Ross County going down. I'll be really honest. I think they would be too strong for, an Ayr United or a Livi coming up in the playoffs. They are in trouble. A couple of wrong results somewhere could really put them off piste. I don't see them going down directly. If they will go down, it will be through the playoffs. But I think for Ross County, they know they're in that fight, but they're veterans of that fight. So I don't think this will be a worry for them. It may be a worry for their fans, but as a club, I don't think it'll be too much of a hassle for them. They kind of know they're. Like Celtic winning the league, Ross County are there for staying in the league.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. I think looking at it from a neutral perspective, they don't look like a team that has to worry about going down. I know obviously it's just me saying that, not being a Ross County fan, but I just think how with the inconsistencies of Dundee and Kilmarnock, I think they're more likely to finish 11th than Ross County. But this is the beauty of the sport, is I feel as if I say every week you've got these big games against each other now going into the latter half of the season. But I'm going to turn the attention back to Aberdeen. Robbie, they keep the pressure on Hibs at third. Only thing, I think Hibs are just winning with a bit more pizzazz, right, compared to Aberdeen. But it would fourth or fifth if they ultimately fall short in the race for third, would fourth or fifth still be an achievement considering they didn't finish in the top six last year? Or will they feel disappointed and let down due to that fantastic start at the start of the season?
I think there'll undoubtedly be some feelings of disappointment just because of how strong they did look at the start of the season, and then that kind of run was just woeful, wasn't it? And yeah, I think at the end of the day, at the end of the season, when the fans probably look back at it, they'll think, you know what, that was a very good season for us. You know, we weren't there last year, but yeah, they'll possibly be a bit of relief there as well that they've managed to just get out of this rut of form, because it was like God knows how many games, 13, 14 games, was it? I think there probably will be a little bit of relief that they've actually just started to play a little bit better. But I did think that there was still kind of elements of wobbliness there against Ross County at the weekend. So yeah, I think that they'll probably be more disappointed than pleased.
No, I agree. I think with the start of the season, they had. I talked about Hibs maybe splitting the big two. Aberdeen could have done it this season if they had that consistency, but oh, it was never in the realms of expectation or possibility for Aberdeen this season. But look, we'll move on. We're going to move on to down in Ayrshire, Rugby Park. Kilmarnock 2, Motherwell 0. Fraser Murray scored the opener after another goalkeeper mistake. It was Ellery Malcolm. Made this mistake, albeit this isn't as high profile as Jack Butland, then the other one I'm going to get into later on the show. And then Joe Wright scored the second shortly after the break from a set piece. Fraser Murray scored the first. It was a big 3 points for Kilmarnock, wasn't it, Finlay? They hadn't won since Valentine's Day, am I correct?
Who's Finlay?
Finlay's not on the show. It's Stefan. Stefan.
It was a massive win for Kilmarnock. A team that really under Derek McInnes you would expect to be a lot higher up the table. It was a really good performance from them. It was really well maintained. I don't think Motherwell really did anything that really caused too many problems for them. When you look at the stats, and the sort of facts of the game, Kelly just seemed like they were in control for most of it. They'd far more shots, they had far more shots on target. I just think it was an overall really strong performance from a Kelly side in desperate need of a win, which took them relatively up the table, right on Motherwell's backs. Their chances of getting into the top six are obviously gone, but being best of the rest should really be the aim for Derek McInnes and Kilmarnock, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think they're too good a team to be languishing at that end of the table. But look, they've still got to turn up more often than they have this season. The red card was shown twice in this game. One ended up being overturned by VAR, and one was given by VAR. I'm not going to spend any time on the Dominic Thompson red card. I think we can all be a bit unanimous and say VAR was correct to step in. It wasn't a red card. We'll just kind of skip over that. The one I want to talk about though is the Kofi Bauma one. That was a, I don't even know if it could get given as a free kick. I don't know, because he does go through the ball. We touched on it off air a little bit, but Robbie, I'm going to start with you. Was Matthew McDermott right to go to the monitor and send Kofi Bauma off?
It might be an unpopular opinion, but I actually do think that it probably was a red card. I think you can there will be a lot of people saying that look, he's just cleared the ball and followed through. But I think as a footballer, you can clear that ball without following through as much as he did. I think we saw a similar thing, not on the not kind of in the same motion, but when Liverpool played Everton the other week with Tarkowski, that was definitely a red card, and I think he could have very easily not followed through. I think to an extent it is similar. I think in that position you can clear that ball without lifting your foot so high that you're then colliding with another player's knee, and at the end of the day, it ends up in a dangerous position when a player's got his legs planted. So it might be an unpopular opinion, but I would give that as a red card.
I like how you mentioned the Tarkovsky tackle, because I think they touched on that in on Sports, and I completely agree with them here. I think that definitely weighed on the officials' minds, because that's been, what was that? That was Wednesday night, and that's all that's really been spoken about since is that tackle. So I think that's definitely played some part, which is mental to say. Stefan, same question. Was it the right decision in the end?
Not for me. I don't think so. I get the follow through. I totally understand why the referees came to the decision. The Tarkovsky one maybe has played on the mind a little bit, but for me, I don't think there was any intent there. I don't. If anything, I would say it was reckless, which by the laws of the game would be a yellow card. I don't know. I think we're just being a little bit too harsh in situations, because there can be situations where you follow through and you make contact with the player. It's a hard one. I think you have to take one. I have to take them all into like their own little bubble and kind of objectively say it based on one by one basis. I don't think we can say when multiple happen that we categorize them all in the same one and say they're all similar to ones that were sent off. For me, I don't think it should have been a red card. I think a booking would have sufficed. And Motherwell clearly feel the same way because they've lodged a contest that with the SFA. So no, for me, I would say it's unfortunate to receive a red, and a yellow would have sufficed for me.
Go on then, Mark. You'll have to be the deciding vote here.
I don't think it's a red card, and then I'm gonna probably shot you even further. I don't think Tarkowski's is a red card either.
Oh, Jesus.
I think that both of them win the ball. I know the follow through is a bit nasty in two of them, but the objective is to win the ball. Maybe I'm old school. Maybe you get away with it, Maddie, as the pundits say. But no, for me, no red cards for either of them. But look, taking that away, Kelly were really good. It was a really good performance, which has been few and far between for them this season. That gives them a bit of a platform to build on their ninth, and you know how crucial momentum can be at this stage of the season. But on the other hand, with Motherwell, they host Hearts next week, in which I would probably say it's a proxy top six playoff. I know they've both of them are relying on St Mirren to drop points, who I think they're at home to Ross County. I know they're playing Ross County, but I think, don't know if it's at home or away.
Yeah, it's home.
Is it home? Yeah, I thought that. Stefan, I'm just going to jump to you. Just a quick one. Who's going to get that last top six spot?
This is a really contentious one. It's between Hearts and St Mirren for me. With all due respect to Motherwell fans out there, they've not got a cat's hope in hell's chance or a cat in hope's chance, whatever they're saying is. I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I think Tynecastle next week might be a little bit too far. I'm going to double check it. Definitely as Tynecastle before I say that. No, it's not. It's Firth Park. Never mind. I'm just going to say I don't think Motherwell have a chance, to be honest. I think Hearts are. I just think Hearts will be too strong for them, to be quite honest. And if Motherwell play the way they played down in Ayrshire, the same way they play against Hearts, I think Hearts could be really in for a strong victory, if I'm being honest. St Mirren, I think the way the league rocks up is Hearts have to draw, St Mirren have to win, for St Mirren to get into the top six, and then obviously if Hearts win, then it's all over for St Mirren, because yeah, Hearts really are the last team to secure it. So for me, I think Hearts will do it. And I think St Mirren can consider themselves really unlucky not to be in the top six.
Yeah, not a St Mirren will be kicking themselves. They had the chance to take matters into their own hands with regards to the top six. The away to Dundee are picking up a bit of form at the right time. They won 2-0. It was a double from the man on fire, Simon Murray, and that is not a pun about his ginger hair. He grabbed a brace. That brings his tally up to 15 in the league. His joint top goal scorer with Dyson Maeda, and it's 20 in all competitions. Look, Robbie, we know Scotland struggle with strikers, and I've been kind of banging this drum since the last international break. Simon Murray's got to be in with a shout for a Scotland call-up. The next friendlies are against Iceland and Liechtenstein. It isn't until June, so there's a lot of football to be played. Obviously, Dundee might very well get relegated. But look, it's a position Scotland have struggled in. Would you like to see Simon Murray in the next Scotland squad?
Yeah, I would. I really don't see why. I can't see a reason why they shouldn't, to be honest, because I think Scotland, one of the biggest problems is the strikers. You know, we saw that in the last international break in the Greece games. You know, I just think, why not give him a chat? The problem is, I don't know if Steve Clarke will. I think he's too kind of. He's too used to playing the same players over and over and over again. And we saw that in his team selections against Greece. So I don't know whether he will, but when you're leveling the top scorer while you're playing for 11th place Dundee, I just think surely that's it says something, doesn't it? I think he's too good not to give a try. And I think it would be daft not to in games where they can afford to play around with the squad a little bit.
Yeah, no, exactly. It is games that don't matter. And with the greatest respect, I know Iceland have had success in recent years, but Liechtenstein's a game that should be a formality for Scotland with the squad that they possess. And the only thing I would say, Simon Murray's 34, I believe. So he's probably not going to be in with a shout for the World Cup qualifying squad and the World Cup, obviously, if Scotland get there. But talking about Simon Murray, we'll go more on his team, really, Dundee. It's a massive win in the grand scheme of things, isn't it, Stefan? Where every single other team in that sort of area of the table, they all got the point. So it was, how crucial was that when all said and done?
It was a really crucial result for Dundee. I think when you look at that game on paper, anyone would have said St Mirren should win that. St Mirren could have really given themselves the strongest position possible going into the top six into the last day, because if they'd won that, that'd have taken them on to, I think, 41 points. It would really have required the Hearts victory against Motherwell, and then just seeing off Ross County would have really been the icing on the cake for St Mirren. Looks like they're going to have to do it the hard way. But no, a really, really strong result for Dundee. Propels them up the table, back into that sort of dragging other teams down towards them as well, which Tony Docherty can only really be happy about, knowing that there is still that fight for survival. Whereas if they lost that game, they would have been, what, 5 points really away. St Johnstone would really have been on their tail. We'll come into that in a moment. It could have been a totally different story if the weekend had panned out differently. Just touching on Simon Murray, I don't think he should get a Scotland call up. I get his goals this season have sort of drove him into that conversation, but not for me. I get it as Liechtenstein, I get it as Iceland, but if we're really looking at Simon Murray as a guy that can stop or kind of fill Scotland's goal drought, I mean, I'm going to argue and I'm going to say, can we just go and turn the lights out and just shut the door on it? Because not for me.
Not for you, the top scorer in the Premiership. He's not for you.
No, because when you take it into isolation, yeah, it's a great achievement in one season. No, he's barely he's been there, and he's I'm not saying he's not a great goal scorer, but for Scotland levels, no, I'm really going to stick with that. No, not for me.
Well, he was gifted one of his goals. This is the goalkeeping error that I've been alluding to for the rest of the show. It is my official highlight of the week, not to quote Super Scoreboard. Zach Kamen in the second half. It's not so much the ball that he plays out, it's just his reaction afterwards. If you're a goalkeeper and you gift the striker the ball, you've got to get back to your goal as quick as you can. He couldn't have got his goal even slower, and then the ball doesn't even go by him that fast, and he makes the worst attempt to stop it. So it's almost 2 hours for the price of one, and it costs his side dearly today.
I was about to say that actually, because when I seen it, I was like, "What?" I couldn't believe it. It was it like the pass out, like that's just unlucky. But the attempt to dive for it was just pathetic. It was like slow motion, like he'd gone by him and then he dived. Like it genuinely was, it was cartoonish almost. From someone that's been reliable for St Mirren.
Yeah, it was a good sign. It was a good sign to bring him back. And then I even thought, when I saw the Jack Butland one first, and I thought, if that came to, I don't want to say if that came to me, but it's like if that sort of shot comes to you in fives, you just save that with your feet. You know what I mean? Like the goalkeepers are kind of just making it harder for themselves, throwing themselves to the floor. Maybe they need to learn a thing or two for you and I, Stefan. But God, we're going to stick to the subject of St Mirren. As I mentioned, there's a huge, huge chance to for their top six chances, but they've absolutely blew it. Robbie, where do you think St Mirren need to improve personnel wise? Maybe is it in the dugout? Is it in the playing squad? Because they've got a good squad, but the players are getting on a bit, if I'll say it quietly. And look, they got top six last season. This is probably a good time for them to catapult into a regular top six team, do you not think?
Yeah, I think to be honest, they could do with probably a defender and probably another goalkeeper, I would say. I think the problem with St Mirren this year is that they've not been too bad with scoring goals, but they've conceded way too many. And I think Gogic obviously is a great player, and he's been brilliant for him for a long time. I think he's been okay for him this season, but I don't think he's been as good as he probably maybe has been in the past. I just think, like you say, that there's a lot of players getting on in that squad now, and I think they probably could just do with something to shake it up. I mean, you look at what Aberdeen did. Defensively, they're probably one of the worst in that going through that run. They just looked all over the place, and they brought in Alfie Dorrington, young lad, who seems to have steadied the ship a little bit. So sometimes I think you just need a little bit of youthfulness in there to kind of get that energy and get that kind of tenacity back up.
Yep, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think they'll be looking at the last couple of games thinking they really should have made top six, theirs to lose. And it's through no fault of they've played well, but it just fell short at the last. I don't see them ultimately getting top six. I think it's gonna be Hearts or Motherwell. I'm not entirely sure what way that can go. But we're gonna move on to the Sunday fixtures. That wraps up Saturday. Sunday, probably, I'm going to say, shock of the season so far. It was St Johnstone 1, Celtic 0. Daniels Balodis with his first goal for St Johnstone gave them, as we said, it's a much needed 3 points. I think St Mirren would have been seeing the scores come in on a Saturday and thinking, right, we are absolutely doomed. Everybody's winning and we've got the runaway champions to play. But look, I think to St Johnstone's credit, they were the much better team, weren't they, Stefan?
Yeah, listen, undoubtedly with a much better team, they had much more fire, hunger and desire to win the game, to keep Celtic out. Was it Andy Fisher in goal had far more sort of tenacity to stop Celtic scoring than the majority of the Celtic players had to actually score for Celtic. Thought it was a really strong performance, one that St Johnstone fans can be proud of, one that the manager can really be proud of, because he set his team up perfectly and really nullified Celtic at every opportunity. The Kun chance on the line, no fault to Kun there. It's just a great tackle. The other end, James Forrest should score for the 16th season in a row. So for me, a really, really great performance by St Johnstone. Contrast that to Celtic, to a rather dismal, lethargic, uninspiring disaster class, if I've ever seen one. And not for the first time this season have Celtic looked miles off it. You look to the Rangers game 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. You look to the game back in back in January. You look to the Hibs game in February. It's just been an all too common theme for Brendan Rodgers and his side, who look like they've already got their bags packed and away on their summer holidays.
Yeah, you mentioned, I think that's, I mentioned earlier as well, Celtic dropped 14 points in 2025. Before that, from the summer to New Year, I think this one needs fact checked. I think they only dropped four, and there's a away to United and at home to Aberdeen. So, look, Robbie, it's not quite panic stations yet for Celtic and their fans, given the 13-point gap lead at the top, and we can make the argument they might play better if they had a bit more of a kick up the backside. But look, are they in any danger of blowing the treble that's been on ice? Look, this is the team that they have to beat in the semi final, and then you've got Aberdeen or Hearts in the final, so do they have to be more careful, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's. I still wouldn't say that there's a chance of them blowing it, but I think one thing I did take from that game, and actually some of the recent Celtic performances, is there is probably in the league an element of complacency coming in. I think we mentioned it last week that I think Celtic, when it matters, do turn up. But in games like this, in a game with all due respect to St Johnstone, this is a game where Celtic were probably expecting to win and then didn't. Brendan Rodgers after the game, I think this is a quite a telling quote from him, but he said something along the lines of St Johnstone fought for every ball and that the game was more important to them. And I think when your manager's saying that, I think that kind of shows you where Celtic are mentally. You know, the league's not won yet. I know obviously they're miles ahead, but to then go out and say that the game was more important to them when nothing's won yet and you're still fighting for a league title, I just think it does show a little bit of complacency there. And I think, like I say, I don't think it will be a case in the cup competitions, because I do think Celtic turn up when they have to, but it puts a kind of bit of a little black mark on the season, I suppose. It won't, but I think to an extent it's just a bit of a disappointing end to the season if they keep dropping silly points when they should just be steamrolling these teams.
It would be mental if they lost at Ibrox after a split, and then Rangers have beat them 3 times in a season, and Celtic have still won the league. I can't. I don't think that's ever happened before. Stefan, one more point about St Johnstone before we move on to our final game. I mentioned everybody else at that end of the table won on the Saturday. Do you think that gave St Johnstone more like fire in the belly, like knowing, like? I know you have to get results when you're at that end of the table, but they had to win, or else it was going to be like, what is that, an 8 point gap if they never won? So do you think playing on the Sunday played out of their hands?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Simo Vallecari really probably got his team up for that, saying this really is do or die for your season, because an 8 point gap with 5 games to go really leaves you with some. The wall is right on you and it's about to close in on you. It was a really well played plan from St. Johnstone. Thought they were fantastic. With the pressure on, they swung and they hit a home run, because no one in their mind before this game would have given them a sniff at beating the champions elect. Not even a St Johnstone fan would have said, we'll rock up there, we'll give you 3 stands and we'll take 3 points. No one would have said it. And anyone that said they did is just saying that for the fun of it, because there was absolutely no one on the planet Earth that saw that result coming. It was, from a Celtic perspective, negligence. From a St Johnstone perspective, miraculous.
Yeah, I think even if St Johnstone do go down this season, I think a lot of the supporters will remember and cherish that victory, because they don't come so often against the Glasgow two,
Who
really
do
not.
you think will go down,
In
and who'll finish 11th?
12th and 11th, I do think it is too little too late for St Johnstone, but that performance yesterday gives me more hope for them next season, because I didn't think they performed too well against Livingston. But I think that if they play like that, they'll come back up. And then in the 11th, I am going to say Kilmarnock.
Because I'm going to be a little bit different here. I don't think St Johnstone are straight for the chop. I don't think they'll go down the trap door. Not in 12th anyway. I think we could have a comeback of the century on here.
So who do you see finishing 12th?
Think Dundee are in real bother, right? But again, they're a side that's been in the relegation playoffs, and I think they've won both sides of it as well. But I've got a feeling there might be a falter from Dundee. It was a massive win on Saturday, but I don't know. I think Scottish football is always full of excitement. I think we're in for one last gasp of excitement in the relegation fight, which I think would be iconic for Scottish football.
Sorry, can I just? I've got one thing to say kind of in reply to the St. Johnstone fin not finishing bottom. I just think they play that. Obviously, the game plan was brought out to perfection against Celtic, but St. Johnstone have tried to play the same way the whole time since the new manager came in, and the majority of the time, I don't actually think it has worked. They've tried to instill this, playing out from the back kind of style of play, and the majority of the time they do make mistakes. More often than not, they do make mistakes which lead to chances, and that did happen against Celtic yesterday. Celtic just were unable to take their chances. So I think when you're in a relegation dogfight like that, and you're constantly trying to play it out from the back and then giving the ball away, I think there's probably too much at stake, and I think it'll probably come back to bite them if they don't sort that out.
Yeah, it was more pragmatic approach from St. Johnstone yesterday than we're used to seeing. I know I'm a bit conscious of time, so I'm going to move on to the final game of what was an upsetting weekend in Scottish football, as I mentioned earlier. In the capital city, Hearts nil, Dundee United 1, Sam Dalby with the only goal as Dundee United won at Tynecastle for the second time this season. And just an interesting stat, every game between these sides this season, the away team has won 1-0, which I thought was quite interesting. Big chance miss from James Wilson in the first half. He also missed a free header at Celtic Park as well. It's two goals, not two, well, two should have been goals. It's quite unbecoming of what we're used to seeing for James Wilson. Stefan, I'm going to pose a question to you purely because you're Scottish. Do we have to be more careful with like sort of younger talents from the academies, because obviously there's a lot of media attention with James Wilson being Scotland's youngest ever player and his form at Hearts. Do you think the pressure maybe getting to him?
I
Is
don't think
that
the
what you're saying?
pressure's getting to him. No, I wouldn't say the pressure's getting to him. I think we do need to be careful with young talents, but I think we also can't be too careful with them, which I think is a common theme, excuse me, that we've seen in the past, is because everyone gets hyped up about Scotland, young Scotland players being the next, Scotland equivalent to Gareth Bale for Wales, or people of that ilk. I think James Wilson has had a really, really strong season at Hearts. He's really put himself about. He's got his name out there. You look at the chance at Celtic Park last week. Should have buried it. Should have taken the chance and scored. Absolutely. The chance on Sunday as well. It's a hard one. But you then apply that with the red card as well. I don't overall think the pressure's getting to him. I just think it's a player that's, maybe just short in confidence a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that red card that James Wilson's seen from Nick Walsh. It's another one similar. It's not a similar tackle to the Kofi Bama one, but it has split a lot of opinions. So I'm just going to do like we did with the Bama one. Robbie, I'll start with you. Red card or not?
Yeah, again, I do think it's a red card. I mean, the thing you have to, I think, also remember is he is 18 years old, and I think it is just an inexperienced challenge. It's a silly tackle at a silly time, and as a young player, you're bound to make mistakes. It's part of the footballing kind of process. It happens. You see it so many times. I just think there's no malice in it. It's just a clumsy tackle, a stupid tackle at a stupid time, and it's ended up hurting Hearts. But yeah, I would say it's a red card definitely, because his studs are up and end up right up in his shin.
A striker's tackle, some would call it. Stefan, same question to you. Yeah, do
I
you think it's a
think
red
it's
card?
more a case of, as a similar tackle to the Kofi Bamer one, but for me it's the intensity that he's gone in, and it's not even like he's won the ball, like the attempt is there to win the ball, but he's caught him far too high up the leg for me, and that's kind of where the difference lies. Is I thought the Kofi Bamer one, there wasn't that much intensity in the challenge, but for me, that James Wilson one, when you look back at it, you see the speed that he goes in at and how high his leg is up. It's almost more than halfway up the leg, or the shin, Yeah, I don't think it's a silly challenge. It's dangerous, and yeah, it is a red card for me.
I agree. There we were unanimous on something. No, I think it's a red card. I never initially thought it was a red card, and then there's one angry scene. It catches him quite high. I don't think there's any malice in it, but it's just he got it wrong. But Sam Dalby got the winner. It was a guided header. I really hope Dundee United are able to keep him next season, and they very well might. It looks like Wrexham are going to be getting promoted to the English Championship. Robbie, I'm going to go back to you. I just mentioned there, Wrexham are promoted, well, look like they're going to be promoted to the English Championship. This is probably two questions for the price of one. Is Sam Dalby the quality striker you can get away with in the English Championship? And if not, are Wrexham best sending him back to Dundee United either on loan or permanently?
I think he is the quality. I think especially because Wrexham will be one of the kind of lower teams in that league. I think Sam Dalby's definitely good enough to play for him. And I think Wrexham will probably be licking their lips watching his performances for Dundee this year because they're thinking, you know, they've obviously got Paul Mullin, but how old is he now? And I just think you've got a relatively young player there who's been scoring a lot of goals and playing pretty well, and is also physical in a league like the Championship, which is a physical league. I think they'll be absolutely licking their lips, thinking that they don't need to go and splash big money on a new striker. I think they'll splash money in other areas, but it seems daft for them not to give it a try after how good he's been this season, I would say.
I think they could do worse than just give him a go. I know the Championship is a hard division, and Wrexham, you know, they're well backed with the Hollywood owners. They probably will sign another striker. You saw Birmingham sign Jay Stansfield for upwards of 10 million in League One, so I'm sure Wrexham will follow suit. Sam Dalby's a brilliant option to bring off the bench. Stefan, keep on Dundee United. That was our second 1-0 win in a row. Both away from home at Tynecastle. I would argue, I think a lot of people would back me up saying it's a much harder place to go to than Ross County. But look, is it just at this stage of the season? Because I think, see, with the teams competing for third, Dundee United, Hibs, Aberdeen, Dundee United haven't, for any point this season, had that spell. Like, Hibs are having that spell now. Aberdeen had that spell to start the season. Dundee United haven't had that sort of spell. They've never really got momentum going at any stage of the season. But the now, is it just a case of it doesn't matter how we win, we just have to go out there and win?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Dundee United have found themselves in a really good position. They're in fifth. I think they were cutting around third and fourth, battling out with Aberdeen and then eventually Hibs. Kind of dropped off a little bit, which will annoy Jim Goodwin, you would suspect. But by all means, like, it's been a really strong season for them in the Premiership, and I don't, you know, I think they will probably acquire that final European spot that we kind of have to offer. I mean, unless St Johnstone beat Celtic and gone and won the Scottish Cup, I would expect Dundee United to finish in fifth. So yeah.
No, I agree, and I think the thing with Dundee United, Hibs and Aberdeen, the competition for third place, we've talked a lot in this episode about who's going to get six. Realistically though, I think it's a bit redundant who gets six anyway, because six doesn't get a European spot, and you could argue obviously it keeps you guaranteed away from 11th because you're close enough there, but whoever finishes sixth is not getting near the European spot. You're having to overturn an 8 point gap in five games, which for me is just not going to happen. But look, that is the end of the action. But of course, we're going to leave you with a quiz returning. I'm going to say favourite. It went down kind of well with some people I know who listened. It went down well with reigning champion Robbie Caulfield. It's going to be another game of cap or no cap. I don't know how many of these I can produce, so because there's only so many players who have had a questionable cap or who's not had a famous cap. But we'll do the same sort of Scotland versus England criteria. Stefan, you aware of how it works?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just name the player and you let me know if you think they've been capped or not. You'll be representing Scotland, and Robbie Caulfield, you'll be representing England. So, Stefan, I'm just gonna start with you. I'll just get straight into it. No time conditions or anything. You've got all the time in the world to think. Just no Googling. I know what you're like. Right. Starting off,
Easy.
number one, Murray David. Murray Davidson.
I don't know why, but like for a period, he had a really good performance for St Johnstone, but I
Good
don't know
stall in this, isn't it? You can hear the
if...
fingers tapping on the phone screen as you speak.
Nah, no cap.
Okay, number two, Stuart Finlay.
Cap.
Okay, number three, Paul Hanlon.
Nah, no cap.
Number four, I hope you remember this guy, Lewis McLeod.
Lewis McLeod.
He came through Rangers and then he played for like Brentford and
Nah,
somebody
no
else.
cap.
And then finally, Graham Shinney.
Oh, that is a good one. Nah, no cap.
Okay. Robbie, I know you're aware how this works, so we're just going to batter straight into it. First one for you, David Bentley.
No cap.
Okay, number two, Nigel Riolkoker.
No cap.
Okay, number three, Vinnie Jones.
I'm not going to say no cap because I don't want to say it three times in a row. I'm going to say cap, but I don't think he did.
Okay, number four, Stephen Cocker. Former Dundee player, of course.
Oh, did he get a cap? No cap.
And final player, Jack Rodwell.
Cap.
Okay, I can confirm. Oh, we're gonna have to go after the tie break question. It is a 2-2 draw. I'll run through the results quickly. Stefan Murray Davidson has one cap. He played 2 minutes in a friendly under Craig Levein, so
Of
he
course
has
he did.
one. Stuart Finlay got that right. He's got one cap, one goal against San Marino. Paul Hanlon, he's got one cap, so you got that one wrong. Lewis McLeod, you got that right. He has no caps. If you knew who he was, you might have pondered over it a bit more.
Hi.
And then Graham Shinney, you got that one wrong. He got six caps, I think it was, but it was when Tierney and Robertson were injured. A bit similar to like what Ralston's getting now on the other side. Robbie, poor showing for you after your full house last week. David Bentley got seven caps for England. So you got that
I
wrong.
said no cap, Jesus.
You got Nigel Riolkoker right. He had no caps. Vinnie Jones, I was being a bit cheeky. I've been a bit cheeky on my next two. Vinnie Jones, you got wrong by saying he was capped, but he has been capped for the Welsh national team. He's not been capped for the English national team. I never knew he played for Wales until I've done my research for this. And then the next one, I've got done. You said wrong. I've got it done as wrong. You said no cap for Stephen Cocker. He has got a cap for
Does that
England.
mean I win?
No, would you say no cap for Stephen Cocker?
I said no cap.
No, he's got yeah. So you got that wrong. He's got a cap for England, and then he's also got a cap for Sierra Leone. That's how I was being a bit cheeky with the two. And then you got Jack Rodwell. Correct. That was so you got both to a piece. I'll go to my tiebreak question. There's no quite cap, no cap, but it's just the head-to-head record. England have more wins than Scotland, but what is the gap? Does that make sense? Like, how many more wins do England have against Scotland than Scotland have against England? Stefan, I'm going to ask you to text me your answer right now.
Right, hold on.
And then when you text me, I'll ask Robbie
So how
to
many
say,
more
is it was.
wins do England have
Yeah,
more than Scotland?
England have more wins in the head-to-head against Scotland, but
Okay,
how many is it?
I'm
And
texting
whoever's
now.
closest wins.
All right, there you go. I think I'm miles out.
Okay. Robbie, I'll let you say yours first and then I'll read it Stefan's.
I am going to say around about
Hurry up, come on.
10. Sorry, 10.
10. Stefan said 33. The answer is 8. So, Robbie, you win by the skin of your teeth.
On.
49 wins to Scotland's 41.
That's really surprising,
I
actually.
know, because I thought it was it would have been a bigger margin, but then England only surpassed it not even that long ago, I think. I remember it, I think. But I'm not too sure, but there we go. Stefan obviously didn't rate Scotland as much as Robbie did, but
No, absolutely not.
no, absolutely not. But well, look, who can blame you?
I
But
think I also just don't rate England that much as well.
don't rate David Bentley and Vinnie Jones.
Yeah,
Well, that round is up for today's episode of Scottish Football Covered. I have been Mike, joined by Stefan and Robbie. We'll be back with you next Monday at 4 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcast from. Don't forget to join the conversation on Twitter at SFC Covered and enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks for listening.